Radio Czułość. Miejsce, w którym mówimy o emocjach. Z czułością. Joanna Frejus. Zapraszam. Dzień dobry, tu Radio Czułość. Razem ze mną dzisiaj w studio Shai Orr, terapeuta rodzinny i autor książek Cud rodzicielstwa i Dzieciństwo rodziców, wydawanych przez wydawnictwo Natuli. Twórca idei, no właśnie, cudownego rodzicielstwa. Hi, Shai.
Hi.
Thank you for coming here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. Great honor.
I want to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yeah. From the beginning.
I'm intimidated already.
When I saw your book with this really beautiful picture. And I read the Miracle of the Parenting title. I was like, oh no, give me a break. Another man who wants to tell me how beautiful and how great it is to be a parent. I was like, no, I won't read this. And then Natuli called me and asked me to read this. But can you tell me, I know this is a big question, but let's try to figure this out. What is so miraculous in parenting?
That's a good question because it's sometimes very confusing. And I also have a problem with it. You know, it's funny that when I started teaching this with parents, I called it, the name was Parents with No Fear.
Ooh.
That's the name. Like, no fearful parenting or what.
Yeah. Okay.
And one of my students, which was more developed.
I would read that. Yeah, I would read
She
that
came to me. She was very developed in marketing and in branding. And she said, you cannot emphasize the negative thing. You should emphasize the positive thing.
Oh, that's the problem when we speak about parenting.
And that's how Miraculous Parenting came out. And also I know from Natuli that in Polish, miraculous is a very kind of religious word.
Yes.
So it also has, in Hebrew, the name is, you should translate it, parenting as a craft of miracles.
Oh.
The word craft is very important.
Okay.
And I couldn't find this in English.
Mm-hmm.
It was too awkward.
Okay.
And I understand you because I am myself, I don't like big words. I don't like idyllic illusions.
Mm-hmm.
My work since I started to be kind of, since I turned from being a musician to being a therapist. In the beginning, I was doing some workshops that people were going into really deep processes, but then I saw nothing goes into their life. It's only kind of a spiritual entertainment, you know?
Yeah, like a pause in the daily life.
A pause and escapism.
Okay, okay.
Like it looks like you're going into something, but actually you escape from your real life, your responsibilities. And me going slowly and slowly into parenting made it solve this problem with me, because when you work with parents, you work in real life.
Yeah.
So the name is ambiguous to me too. And I really focus on what works and what is effective to each one that I meet or teach in his specific life. And I'm really very clear about that. I'm not kind of, my ancestors, you can say mental ancestors are not spiritual people. For me, like, for example, Alice Miller or Neil from Summer Hill, these are the people that I see as my, you know, spiritual teachers. Mm-hmm. And they work deeply in life. But there is a miracle. That's why I don't take off this name.
Yeah. What is it?
The miracle is that dealing with really great difficulties you have with your child, or you have with yourself communicating with your child.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people and most of the parenting concepts are dealing with what's right and wrong,
yeah,
and what to do.
And what not to do.
What to do, what not to do, what's right and what's wrong. That's most of the parenting and also experts' conversation about parenting, which for me is very boring and very shallow.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that given the fact that I am a parent, and actually it doesn't matter if you became like me 35 years old a parent or you became 18 years old a parent, it doesn't matter. It even doesn't matter how you became a parent. The moment you choose, doesn't matter if it happens before or after or when your child is 4 years old, the moment you choose to take this responsibility, like I choose to become the ground for this beautiful, sensitive, dependent, trusting creature. I choose to be the ground for this human being in this world. The moment you choose this, you're a grown-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe grown-up people don't need advice and tips from others. They need inspiration. They sometimes need containment and guiding when they break down.
Mm-hmm.
But about whether to let him see half an hour television or 1 hour, whether to use this technique or that technique in putting him to sleep, that for me is underestimating a parent.
Okay.
But the miracle is that instead of going all into all these what to do or what not to do, what is right, what is wrong, you listen deeply into yourself, what happens in the time you are in this struggle with your child or 3 hours afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You listen deeply inside yourself. You listen deeply inside your child's spirit or soul. And the change comes from there. Like, it's a miracle because this is the first miracle, okay? Listening deeply to what happens inside me as a parent guides me into what I really want to take my child.
Mm.
What are my obstacles or what are my beliefs that I don't want to work upon anymore? What is the interchange I would like to take in order to give my child what he really asks me for?
Mm-hmm.
This is an inner process, an inner contemplation that affects life as a miracle. You know, I meet people in the clinic, some father, 45 years old, he's totally detached from his child for 2 years already. He's frustrated. He knows what's good for his child. His child just doesn't want to listen to him. He comes to me. I contain him.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find the right way and the right moment to ask him the question, you know, this child that you talk about, this aggressive, unobedient child, as for the moment, he's the only child you have. When you're going to come home, you're going to meet this troublesome child. Maybe he'll change in a few days, in a few months, in a few years. But all the time that you're focused on how he will change or how you will bring him to change, your only living child is alone without you, waiting for you to change your mind about him. So I ask him, what do you think about receiving my help to containing, which means totally loving this aggressive, unobedient, troublesome child now?
Mm-hmm. And what is he saying?
And he's shocked.
Yeah.
And sometimes he resents for a few meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, usually I meet, and also my students, they meet parents that tried many, many other things and it didn't work for them.
Yeah.
And we meet parents that their love to their child and their connection to their child is top priority in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really believe that a parent that is parenting is some side gig in his life would read this book or want this kind of therapy.
Yeah, it won't work.
Yeah. So that's when I describe him, this child, and I tell him to look at the eyes, for example, in his imagination of this aggressive child and tell me what's beautiful in his blue eyes and big eyebrows and all this.
Mm-hmm.
He starts to understand that I am his ally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love this child too. Because he sees I'm very excited when he tells me about it. And then he agrees to give it a chance. Because, you know, even if it sounds, if it's not so conventional, it is very logical what I just said. This child that is aggressive is the only child you can love now. So what do you prefer? To wait a few months or a few years until some other child will come to your house in the same eyes?
Mm.
Or to find a way to love the child the way he is now?
Yeah, okay.
And what I want to say about the miracle is that he did this shift inside him with me. And he goes home. And miraculously, all the behavior of his child changes. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even talk about the next step in the process, which is, why does the child bring these difficulties? Like, what all that you know about the 7 requests that I read?
Yeah, what is the source? What do he need?
And we didn't even get there. I only invited him to move from judgment to containment with a child as he is, and things start to change in their home. And this is an example of how this looking inside and reconnecting the parent, reconnecting to his love, miraculously affects the real communication, the real life, and the real behavior of the child.
Yeah.
So this is one part of the miracle.
Okay, and this sounds really beautiful. This sounds really, you know,
you mean too
God.
Beautiful?
Yeah, too beautiful. Yes, I mean too beautiful. You know, you can just sit for a moment, talk to your therapist, change your point of view or the way you think, which, you know, it's hard enough, but yeah. And then you will go home, look in your child's eyes and feel this deep love. And then troubles will vanish.
You describe it like now we have the music. Da, da, da,
yes,
da,
yes,
da,
yes,
da,
yes. And those birds and butterflies.
It's not a Disney program.
Yeah, I know. But you know that people who are listening to us now, and they can have this idea that, oh my God, come on.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Yeah, I'm trying everything with this child for the last 2 years and it's giving me such a hard time, you know? And when you are saying, you just need to find this love inside you, sometimes I can imagine, sometimes I can hear this in my work with my patients, that it's impossible for me to love this child at this very moment when this child is, you know, giving me this hard time. And from the psychological or psychotherapeutic point, I know what are you saying. I understand. But also, I think that it can be very, very hard to understand for someone who, you know, is stuck with this angry, with this,
of course,
maybe, you know, some other very hard feelings, maybe for last few years. I'm thinking about mothers left totally alone with no support, trying to, make their way to stay alive during the in this relationship with their child. Thinking about fathers who see their child for like half of hour a day because they have some important stuff to do and work. Yeah, they're busy. Yeah. Business is always busy. Yeah, I'm thinking about parents that are traumatized during their own childhood or during, I don't know, pregnancy and labor, like mothers.
You ask how can this miracle, beautiful, illuminative miracle work with these kind of difficulties?
Yes, how you can make it happen. And I know that this is a complex question because, you know, you need to write and read two books.
But actually it's not complex.
No, okay.
It's not complex. But it's important to emphasize that, you know, I'm not a preacher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'm not a religious, you know, something. I'm a therapist. When we speak here on a podcast, we must, in a way, touch general issues and talk about them generally.
Yeah.
But nothing in therapy or in parenting is general.
Life.
And so, actually, even what you just suggested is part of the miracle. Because what I said before, that when this parent talks with me about his child, before I ask him to contain his child, I contain him.
Yeah.
And I didn't say that many times the miracle starts when this parent that comes to me and it is used to be judged by himself and by everybody because this child brings shame in the, you know, family feasts that the grandparents are disappointed. And this child brings a sense of failure about school because all the teachers and this father, like, which all everybody knows what's good and everybody knows what he has to do. And when he meets me, he starts to see that I'm on the child's side and I don't think there's anything wrong with what he does as a father. And he starts to be able to stop, not only stop judging himself, but containing first his self before of the child. I mean, I am frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I am a failure as a father. And that's what he used to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I invite him to feel, hey, with this child, I'm really helpless. I have no good idea. And many hours a day when I think of him in home, what I pray is that someone will open up a really good boarding school that I could send him there and go on with my life. And I help him to feel this. I help him to express this. I mm-hmm. help him to feel how much I understand him and how much I love him in this situation. And it's easy for me because I was in the situation as a father too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As I said before, when you become a grown-up, which means become a parent, a very important part of it that you're going to fail 40 times, at least 40 times a week on your own agendas. Yeah. On your most enlightened agendas, you are going to fail about it. And if you want to be a perfect parent, quit this business and do something else.
Yeah.
So I, many times, this miracle starts when this father says all this difficulty with his child. And I, for example, just a very specific example, it's not a general thing, ask him, I feel very angry about him. And his first reaction, you know, is, no. He's a child, okay?
Yeah.
I said, no. When you spoke before about how he treats his little sister, what I saw, excuse me, was that you were ready to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And after he starts me and he sees that I'm not judging him,
mm-hmm.
he is ready to say, well, that was true a few moments ago. And then I tell him, you know, I tell him from my experience that a great change was in my life when my big daughter was 1 year and a few months. It was a few years after I started to understand the role of anger as a pure, beautiful, prosperous emotion we received from who created us in order to be authentic with what is good and what is bad for us. So I already knew that as a child I was totally frightened from anger coming from me or coming from other. But growing up and studying and going through therapy, I start to get connected with the pure anger of myself and got ways to express this with people that already are growing up enough to understand this. So I can tell this father, you know, I wanted to kill this child. I brought her to my life. We were living in a beautiful place in the mountains in Israel. And every day when she comes back from the kindergarten, she controls me. I'm like her slave. She doesn't give me a moment of freedom. And all these beautiful mountains and the window, I cannot even enjoy them because I'm okay. And I tell him about this day when I put him in the kindergarten. And I remember this anger letter, technique. And it's a very funny story because we were living in a place where 200 meters to each side, there was no houses, only nature. It's very rare in Israel. It's not like Poland. You cannot find such places in Israel. There's not a lot of nature. And I said, well, I feel this metal shield on my chest, which kind of is a blockage. And it's a wall between me and my child because I'm angry. I'm angry on this creature. Okay, I do an anger letter. And then what's funny is that before I start writing, I go out to the balcony to look if there's anybody there. And how crazy it is. Like the inside judgment on this emotion was so big in me.
Yes.
After all of what I know about anger.
This is such a strong message that you can't be angry with your child.
Exactly. Yeah. So I tell this father this story and I tell him I started to write. There is a rule for how you do this effectively. Yeah. It's kind of like, you crazy little dwarf, I hate you because, I'm angry of you because. One, you control me. And I do it authentically and I do it hatredly and I do it with big curses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
With this little, less than 2 years old creature.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Sweet. She's out here, you know.
Yeah.
And after a few sentences, I pour out crying for maybe an hour. And after I let myself bring this anger, I could do it alone. I know many of the people need to do it together with someone in the first step. It's sometimes impossible to do it on your own. With someone that is your witness and is not afraid of your anger and is not afraid that you are angry at your child. Well, basically, therapist.
Yep.
And the blockage was gone. And my love to my child started flowing again. And there was nothing to do except that.
Yeah, because you just let this be.
Yeah, this negative, as if negative phenomena. So I can tell this father, okay, so now tell me, what's this child you want to kill? What's the worst thing in him? And I help him to write his letter. Inside, I help him to shout on this child. But anyhow, most of the parents reject it on the first place because of what society thinks about it. Mothers with their little babies, when they're breastfeeding, it's the most healing process because, you know, they are expected to be loving and happy while this child actually is sucking their life out of them.
Yep.
Literally.
Yes.
And they need someone to tell them, hey, in this place, your hatred and anger to the child is the best thing for him, not only for you. Because now you are breastfeeding him with anger. When you take the legitimate place with some ally to give yourself a place to hate and be angry about this child, it will stop being upon him. When anger comes out in the right place with the right person, it doesn't control our life anymore.
Yeah.
You know this, yeah. Of course. So that's why the miracle starts, like I said, when this parent contains himself and puts his child aside, you know? It's like when you do in the airplane, okay?
Yeah.
You first take care of yourself. The miracle starts when parents understand that what happens inside them, all these people that, the mothers you said that were left alone because their husband goes away and he comes for an hour and they don't have family around them. Okay, I worked with many mothers like this and I tell her, she comes, I'm loving my child, I don't know what to do about him, he needs me. And when I get the situation, I tell her, okay, understand it. I would feel the same in your situation. But let's take 2 months and forget about your child. Mm-hmm. We must focus on you.
Yeah, and this is, I think, the hardest part too. When you are a mother of a small child and you need to admit, understand that you need to help yourself first. Because it comes with such a, guilty, that you feel so guilty that you want to do something for you while everyone is telling you that the only one that is important in this situation is your child, and because it's so small, dependent and stuff like that. And of course your child needs you, of course. And you also write about this, those seven demands. And of course,
yeah,
it's so important to listen to a child, to
react.
But you can't do it when you don't listen to yourself.
This is actually one of the sources of our destructive society, okay? And I think it's easy to understand. It's not so easy to implement it and change it. But it's easy to understand that a mother that is expected to be happy when her life is partly ruined and she cannot find a way to love this guy, this little creature that is dependent on her. If she doesn't receive containment and appreciation from the people beside her, if she doesn't receive support to take at least one day off in a week, at least 2 nights off a week, at least 1 week with one of her girlfriends away every 2 months, we are growing children, if we don't do this, that from the very beginning of their life, they doubt if they are wanted.
Yes, because
they doubt if they want it, because they feel.
The parent is switching to this surviving mode where there is no place for this authentic, deep love, listening, giving you a space to explore, giving you a space and just have fun with you and all those stuff that you write about.
And also, there's a very important, I'm telling you all the things but it's the issue. This mother, even if she's 18, if she's 38, usually she is a child also.
Yes.
Like for the first request, for example, that your baby is totally, usually mostly focused on that. A request to feel at home, which means to feel contained, to feel secure and to feel nurtured.
Yeah.
The three things are the aspects of...
It's just safe. Yeah.
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 Of course, like you said, she loves this child. She wants to listen. She wants to give him this sense of security. She never received it.
Yeah.
When she was a child and she was crying or she is weak or she didn't want to go to kindergarten, nobody stopped her life, no mother and no father, to ask her, what do you feel? What do you need now? Ah, this kindergarten teacher is intimidating. Ah, okay. Not solving, not doing, just giving her the sense that there's someone that wants to be with besides her totally mm-hmm. when she is weak, when she's in difficulty. Yeah. This didn't happen to her. So actually, she is alone, demanded to give her child something she never received.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that when this child is born, usually her first request is wrecked because she stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
All her relationship with her partner are totally in chaos.
Yeah.
Usually, painfully to say, as the pregnancy is progressing,
mm-hmm.
he becomes more and more childish, mm-hmm. the husband.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he is also a child that never received a home from his parents. Unconsciously, he built this relationship in order to have a mother he didn't have.
Yeah, and now she's...
focusing on a different child. She doesn't... he comes home sad from work and she's not focused on him.
Mm.
So from all these aspects, sometimes even her friends, you know, if she's mother that her friends are not mothers yet, her friends are bored with her. They don't want to be with her anymore.
Yeah.
She talks about her child all the time.
She doesn't feel understand. Yeah.
She didn't receive the sense of the first request at home with her mother. Even if she did some progress about it when she was single or when she wasn't a mother, now all the ground she built is breaking down.
Yeah, all those strategies that she was using all her life, they're just not working because he can't use them in those new situation.
Yeah, it's like someone Miron has brought here a big sandwich, three sandwiches, while I'm not eating for 4 days, and everybody is expecting me to feed you. Well, I'm totally hungry. That's the situation of this mother.
Yeah.
So if, you know, it's a dream, but it's your work, but if it will become conventional, normative, you know, it's enough that the partner will do it. The parents of the mother, her friends, hey, now what you're mostly expected to do is to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when I was working with pregnant women, which many times they didn't come for the pregnancy, but they came for the inner process. I many times told them, hey, this is the time to forget about everything and to learn how to make yourself the center of the world.
Mm.
Because this is the third request issue.
Yeah.
Because this guy, this little child that is coming, this girl or a boy, they still believe we are worthy to take care of our needs, to be who we are, to lead ourselves, to feel unique.
Mm-hmm.
If she comes out, this baby, and she meets some slave, some victim, someone that is totally devoted to the baby but forgets totally about herself,
yeah,
they will not grow to be a self-trusting
person.
Yeah,
because they don't have a source, you know. They don't have a place where they can see this. How you do this? How you do this? How is it to be a self-carrier? Yeah, I need to see this. My mother is doing that, and my father is doing that. So I can learn this. Yeah.
So that's why my wife in Israel, we call it the silent revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because any person that is a parent now cannot base himself on his roots or his family or previous parenting. Yeah. We are revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And like the question you ask, how do you, as a new mother, put yourself in the center?
Mm-hmm.
You must create it. Yeah. You must be certain about that you're worthy of it.
Yes. That's the hardest part. Yeah.
Yeah. when you start to understand that you are worthy of it, you know what's the easy part? You know, there's a trick I do with people about what you said now.
Yeah.
You said the hard part is to feel worthy of.
Yeah.
I can do this trick with you. You want it?
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm a good example, but yeah.
No. If, for example, if you would, I would tell you, hey, even that you have, he's four child?
Yeah.
And he's very needy sometimes, and he's very, okay?
Sometimes he's not.
Let's say that. Sometimes he's, okay. And I'll tell you, well, listen, Joanna, first step in loving your child is focusing on what you need and putting yourself in the center when you are with him and when you are without him.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to ask yourself, what is really good for me? In matters of using my time, matters of relationship, matters of eating, matters of focus on my emotion, even matter of hating him when it's needed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you say, but I'm not worthy of this. What mm-hmm. are you talking about? Nobody told me about this. I'm a mother. I must devote myself to my child.
Yeah.
So the trick I do is I ask you, Cosma, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of your child?
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about it?
Yeah, sure.
Do you think, tell me since honestly, is Cosma worthy of being in the center of his life?
Yes, of course. I would like him to
Are you
feel
happy
like
to
that?
Imagine him growing up to be a man that doesn't fight to take his place or doesn't give up and settle with not if worthiness of his uniqueness, but just living flexibly as a guy that is in the center of his life? Does this imagine picture make you happy?
Yes.
So this is your truth.
Mm-hmm.
What is you? And I use this physical law that I don't know how to say in English. Joanna is equals Joanna whenever she is. Okay, now it's mm-hmm. physical law.
Okay, yeah.
So if it's your truth with Cosma,
yeah,
it's also your truth with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason people, many parents are happy to give it to their child, but are reluctant to give it to themselves,
yeah,
is only because their love to their child is pure and abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And their love to themselves is something they only begin considering about.
Yeah.
But when I do them this trick, they understand, okay, never mind how many ideas I already collected about me not being worthy. Never mind how much my mother believed it. Never mind how society believed it. It's not my truth, because what I just said about my child, that's my truth.
Yeah.
So let's find out how to, like you do with water, you know, take the river and you want to open it up so it goes into these fields.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I don't know the word, but we take this phenomena, this truth,
yep,
that you have towards someone you really love.
Mm-hmm.
And we start moving it into your yeah. relationship with yourself.
Yeah, this is why I love the schema therapy so much, because there are so many techniques and so many, you know, moments that you can see this equality between your actual child and your child that you have inside, yeah? And you have been. Oh yeah, and this is the this is the moment where we are moving to talk about the parents as childs. Yeah, as children, sorry.
Yeah. But that's just, it reminds me
yeah.
just about some little thing you asked about the miraculous.
Yes.
So this is the second miracle.
Yeah.
The miracle is that retuning what is love for us,
yeah,
what we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
agreeing to see that that what we want our child is love,
yeah,
which means or most of the times what we received wasn't love.
Yeah.
And also it means we can now start to create a family that is based on what is really love.
Yeah.
This changed society, not only parenting. And this is a second miracle. Like yeah. you sit in your home, you do things with your child, and miraculously more and more people are inspired by you. It's not only your child.
Mm-hmm.
And what you give to your child, this confidence, what is love and what is not love, makes out of him some man 20 years from now, that will be part of a totally different society as respected to love.
Yeah, this is a revolution. Yeah. You know, I have this very deeply thought that your parenting can heal your childhood. And it's not, you know, it's not the... Well, I'm not saying that if your childhood was, you know, messed up, you need to be a parent to heal this, to heal this. But this is what was my history, that I deeply feel that as a mother, it's the person that I needed to can heal myself from my childhood traumas. And this is, I'm not sure if you're writing about this, but this is also a miracle for me.
Actually, this is part of the basics of the therapy that I teach.
Yeah.
And because these books are mostly focused on parenting, it's not, I don't remember if it's phrased like this, but the second book actually starts with the suggestion that we can only be free and loving with our children and with our patients if we already grew up and let go our loyalty to our parents or the loyalty of the hurt child to calling what he received from his parents love.
Yeah.
And what you just said is very, I really identify with it, because in my phrasing, when you have your child, you become his genuine mother. I mean, you sometimes you succeed, sometimes you fail, but you tune yourself to ask yourself, what is he asking for?
Yeah.
What is the love that he wants? Not what is the love that I learned or that I'm used to give. What is the love that he wants?
Yeah.
That makes you genuine. Parent,
mm-hmm.
a real parent. And that makes it possible for me and for you to be the genuine parent of the hurt child that we were.
Yes.
Because, let's face it, majority, or politely speaking, majority of our listeners, they don't have parents.
They don't have good parents.
No, they don't have parents.
Yeah.
Because when you are a grown up, you're not supposed to have a parent.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a child, you are supposed to have some woman, some man, maybe two of them, that their love will be the ground for your growth.
Yeah.
When you are a grown up, you're supposed to give this to others, your children, your students, your clients. And so first, we're not supposed to have parents, and we're not supposed to work on any kind of relationship with these people, because they are the parents.
Mm-hmm.
They're in charge of the relationship.
Yeah, that's a strong idea. I think, you know, in our society where, you know, that this hamburger idea of life now for people that 30, 40, the hamburger means that you need to take care of your small child or children and of your old parents. So you don't really have, you know, the space for yourself because you are between them.
You know, it's a terrible idea, and it's also a very productive idea.
Yeah.
For social concepts that are built upon debt and upon guilt.
Yeah.
It works great for these concepts.
Yes.
And you know, there are many politicians and economy tycoons that gain a lot that people never feel okay with themselves. But
of course.
But I see it totally different. Like the flow of love is one directional.
Mm. Okay, that's a new idea.
The flow of love is one directional because my 2 years old child is totally dependent on me. And you know, it's important to emphasize that many times people talk about children, they are not conscious that they talk about some 10 years old creature,
mm-hmm.
which can walk and run away and curse them. You always have to think about the 1.5, 2 years old child when you want to understand what happens there. Don't skip about on this age, okay? So when my child is 2 years old, and my belief is about the hamburger,
mm-hmm.
which is powered by the Bible, of course.
Well, yeah.
You know, in the Ten Commandments?
Yeah.
Remember them?
Yeah, yeah.
So the fifth...
It's all there, you're right.
The fifth commandment is you should respect your mother and father. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's very suspicious, you know, that in the Ten Commandments, nobody talks about, you know, children are the base of society. I like to say parenting is the workshop where humanity is creating.
Yeah, okay? I like this line, yeah.
And no genius guy.
You know that I actually have the, it's
marked.
It's like, yeah, it's marked. Yeah.
And so no brilliant man that wrote these beautiful scriptures mentioned in the Ten Commandments something like, thou shall, I don't know how it's beautiful English, thou shall always be sensitive to your child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Only you should respect your mother and father.
Yeah.
You know, in the agriculture society of these times, it's very understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But it affects the beliefs in our society too. But the first commandment is even more important. God says there, I'm your only God. You should never go and listen to other gods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the most, the total authority gives inspiration to all the little authorities like the religious leaders, the politicians, yeah. and the parents.
Yeah, and the parents, of
hey,
course.
Hey, to be, to have power, to have authority,
yeah.
it means the weak ones are in debt to the strong one.
Yeah.
You are in debt to me, and the amount you love me decides how I feel good with myself,
yeah.
and you should never doubt me as your parent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this tortures the natural, the healthy way of the one-way flow of love. Because when my child is 2 years old, she can't even start thinking what is good for me or what I'm sensitive to. Mm. If she starts thinking this, which we all did as children,
yeah.
she starts to give up her childhood.
Yeah,
to be a child is to be taken care of and not to be responsible on no one but yourself. And if I want to be responsible, it's when I feel good and when I want to give my parents something out of my free will, but not as a debt to them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is the parentification. Yeah. Yeah. We can see this with children from homes that not working somehow. Yeah.
yeah.
Not enough, you know, unconditional love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to believe that you are loved. When you receive it, not as a commercial agreement. Okay.
Yeah.
You love me and appreciate me, and I will pay you visits when I'm big, when I'm old. Okay.
Yeah.
Or I will go along your values. No. I can feel that you are loving me only when your love is, you give it to me by free choice without expecting me to give you anything back. That's the only way I can feel loved.
Yeah.
And that's so rare in our society. So this hamburger
mm-hmm.
is a really recipe
mm-hmm.
for disaster. That's what
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. Shai, you think that your... Well, this is a question. Do you think that your childhood had anything to do with your idea of parenting?
Wow. You know, at the beginning, I almost didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's totally very, very influential because you know, I was born in the kibbutz,
yeah,
and in this communal sleeping, children were. I was taken by my mother when I was 3 days to sleep with another 15 children, mm-hmm. with one woman that was in charge and that I didn't know her. And that's how I grew. And I always use this example as to how we are, as parents, slaves of our agendas and values.
Yeah.
Because my mother, she did this because that was the appreciated values of her society. And she preferred the values of the society on her love.
Yeah. Have you ever, if you don't want to, just don't answer, but have you ever talked about it, how she was feeling with this? How she felt.
Part of the disaster there was that the mothers were so denying what they felt. Only now in Israel, research are starting also to focus on the disaster that the mother went through when they did this.
Yeah.
But so when speaking with my mother, she didn't like to speak about it, and she was very in a denial, like emphasizing how good my childhood was and how good I grew up. And, you know, she grew in this society, in this system too.
Yeah.
She was born in the kibbutz too.
Mm-hmm.
My father, that had, when he was alive, he died when my daughter was four, like when I was 40, about 40. My wife was in a very good relationship with him. And one day she asked him about it. How did you feel about Shai sleeping there night after night? And he looked in her eyes and he said, "Can you please not talk with me about it? It's too painful for me."
Okay.
Like, so this means he understood what really happened there, but it was too painful for him. But as for your question, growing up in an orphanage, actually, and it's a very unique orphanage, you know, because, you know, to compare suffering is a stupid thing to do. So I don't compare. But I just say that when you're in an orphanage, 3 hours drive from your parents' house, or when you're orphaned because your parents are dead or aggressive, hurting you, you can somehow in your mind create a story that will make it, you know, it's never reasonable, but make it easier to adjust.
Yeah.
But when your parents sleep happily 500 meters from you, and you know how easy it's them to come and take you, night after night, that makes it really hard to absorb this, to live with this fact, you know?
Yeah, to find any sense in that.
You cannot.
Yeah.
You must, like we all do in many ways, but I think in this case it's very, very early. You must very early give up your worthiness to receive this first request we talk about, and also the third request, to be unique, to be that someone cares about what I feel or who I am. So I think I something I understood after many years of therapy as a therapist, I mean, not only my own therapy, is that I developed a very deep sensitivity to children, but not to what goes inside them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it made me take this path in my life that makes it possible for me to help children to become seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I grew as a child, nobody even knew what noises I make when I have a dream or when I feel cold in the night.
Yeah.
You know, nobody even started to know when I feel totally alone with the children in the kindergarten or the school. It was my only me.
Yeah.
And so that's why for me, when people that read the book or people that go through the therapy, tell me that the child came back to them, or that the child starts shouting. You know, sometimes people come when the child is totally comfortable and cooperative, and they feel he's giving up.
Yeah.
And the first phase, when he starts to see that mother change her path,
mm-hmm.
and she's really interested in what happens inside him.
Yeah.
The first phase of that, he starts shouting.
Yes, because he knows that she will contain this, that she will, that she will be there. She won't go anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
He knows he can trust her to be on his side, never mind how he reacts.
Yeah.
Sometimes at the beginning, the aggressiveness or the expressions are extreme, but when he sees she's serious, like it's not just like, you know, she came from a workshop and everything is beauty.
Yeah.
When he sees she's decisive, keeping on.
Yeah.
The extreme expressions become very, you know, you can say balanced, you could say healthy.
Yeah.
So I think my childhood really affected it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Shai, I have so many questions I would like to ask, but I'm also I know that, you know, it's your time and you are going to kayaking in a moment. I just wanted to thank you, you know.
Thank you too.
Not only for this meeting, but for everything you do, that you are so open with sharing not only your thoughts but also your history and your emotions. It's like you told that this very, very important thing is to talk to each other when we are not well, when we are in troubles, when we are doubting in everything that we know or do, and that happens a lot when we are parents.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if if we were recording already when we were talking about how important it is to mothers of very small children to talk to each other about their authentic feelings.
Emotions,
and that this is so, you know, opening and. And this is something that can make a miracle happen as well. And I'm having this feeling that you are doing this as well. You know, you're sharing your knowledge, but also the part of your history. I'm just hoping that your story and your wife's thoughts will. We'll go further, you know, and to everyone that need to hear this or read this. The last question, the one that I'm trying to ask everyone who's here, but sometimes I forgot. Can you tell me what is tenderness for you? How do you understand tenderness, to being tender?
Actually, I don't think it's possible to be intimate or to be in a real deep connection with someone when there's now not only tenderness as an option, but tenderness as the ground. Because that goes for any kind of deep relationship.
Yeah.
But it becomes even more essential when we talk about pain or difficulty. Because no healthy-minded, sane child or grown-up would even think of sharing or becoming authentic or agreeing to acknowledge his difficulty or his pain when the person in the room with him isn't tender. No, nobody. And when people do this, when some people that are, you know, it starts with teenagers and grown-ups many times, when they just share themselves all over, when they got into the relationship and they immediately talk about their deepest difficulties, or when they, you know, demand attention to their emotions, when someone is occupied, preoccupied, or when someone is not connected to his tenderness, it's because they gave up already. The worthiness to feel together in their pain. Okay, it doesn't show off self-confidence, it showed off giving up. Like, hey, I must have your attention now, which means I don't trust I'll receive your attention. So the inner compass, the inner compass for a place or a person or a moment where I can be connected to all the colors, all the parts of myself, including the painful and hidden ones. My hidden, the compass, the inner compass shows yes when tenderness is around and shows no when tenderness isn't available.
Yeah. I think it's also about the tenderness for ourselves, that I need to be tender, to be with me, standing with myself.
Right. But I must, when I look at the context in the, of the time when where we are talking now, usually containing difficulty or staying together in pain is such a luxury, such a, it's such a non-existence in a society that total majority of us will need stable tenderness from a person from the outside for some weeks sometimes before we allow ourselves to be tender with ourselves. That's usually the
yes, okay? Yes, that's true.
And that's why I emphasize the tenderness from the outside.
Yeah.
It's also for each person that listens to us to ask herself or himself, how many times this week you allowed yourself to just sit down, connect to your tenderness, and ask yourself, what does my child feel today? Or what does my parent feel today? How many, and I don't talk about therapists, I'm talking about people. What percentage of the week, of your week, does this option takes place? You know, and it's very, very important because when you were talking before about thanking me, I just wanted to say how much I thank you, because I read your website, and I just felt that for me, okay, at least for me, you are kind of a partner, like we walk together in a very certain domain. It's not general speaking. We were all brought up, but for generations after generations, to believe that when we are in difficulty, we are alone.
Yeah,
that's the norm. Our society, like 2 days ago, there was celebrations of the uprising here. I was walking in the street. It's in one. It's one demonstration. You can take birthdays. You can take school graduate. Doesn't matter. We are a society of empty shells, walking around, running after outer expressions of happiness and success to feel like we are all nice, okay? You know, people on vacations, people on celebrations, people on festivals, people on the media. But this happiness is usually disguising the pain we can never share with no one, and we can even not be conscious of, because we are like, since a very, very little age, we understood the very simple equation, okay? When I'm happy, productive, successful, cooperative, going with your ideas, my parents, I receive love and I am part of the family. When I'm sad, sense of failure, aggressive, angry, lonely, frightened, in the best case scenario, someone will try to fix me,
yeah,
or to give me advice,
yeah,
but it will only be to bring me back to the main road of everything is normal and all right and
yeah,
happy.
Like the other one is wrong. You know, you can't be there. It's not yeah. the road that you can be. Can you take? Yeah.
So that means yeah. that this all this happiness is in our society is not genuine sense of I feel good or I feel powerful or I feel loved. It's like drugs. Mm. You know, people take drugs to lower the level of sadness or loneliness. Okay, so what I meant when you are my partner, it's like each of one of us in our domain with our people. I'll say for myself, I stand on this main road, autostrada,
mm-hmm.
of a normal, productive, successful happiness that we all. And I stand there, I take a few steps into the road. I say, hey, come down, get down. I'm going to be with you down here with your desperate, broken, self-hatred, outer hatred, whatever fear you have. And the revolution, the silent revolution, is that more and more people that listen to us are going to say, hey, this woman, she's going to be with me when I'm totally broke. I don't have to be happy or normal or productive with her.
Yeah.
I take off this main road. And step by step, this main road become a very near, narrow path. And the main road will be a main road where people feel totally accepted when they are broken and when they're happy.
Yeah.
Because they will know for themselves, and they will be able to also give it to their children, that love and appreciation is not given to you when you are happy and cooperative.
Mm.
You can be broken or sad or angry as much as you want, and I'm on your side with no timer. Okay.
Yeah.
So I believe I want to thank you because I feel that according to what I read. That's actually what we are doing.
I want to believe so. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
To było Radio Czułość. Jeśli chcesz więcej, zajrzyj na mój profil na Instagramie O Matko Depresja albo na mojego bloga pod adresem www.joannafrejus.pl. Do usłyszenia.